All right.
All right.
All right.
All right. All right.
So this one is called Vulnerabilities. A warrior takes every person as an adversary. He sees all their vulnerable points and trains to eliminate his own. A sage has no vulnerable points. A warrior takes everyone as a potential adversary. He assesses each person that he meets for their strengths and weaknesses, and he places himself strategically. No confrontation is ever a surprise. Protection, competition, honor, and righteousness are his principles. He is the weapon. Therefore, a warrior trains body and mind to perfection. He knows that the average person has hundreds of points where death can enter. For himself, he seeks to eliminate as many of his own vulnerabilities as possible. In combat, he defends one or two points, and the rest of his attention is devoted to strategy and offense. Yet no warrior can eliminate all vulnerable points. Even for a champion, there is always at least one. Only the way of the sage eliminates all weaknesses. It is said that the sage has no points for death to enter. This makes the sage, who is perfect in spirit, superior to the warrior, who is merely skilled in spirit. The warrior accepts death, but does not go beyond it. The sage goes beyond concepts of protection, competition, honor, and righteousness, and has no fear of death. The sage knows that nothing dies, so life is merely an illusion. Life is but one dream flowing into another. Meditation. Prayer. So, the warrior or the sage. Keeping in the Star Wars theme, we'll look at Darth Vader as the warrior. constantly combative, wears a mask so nobody sees who he is. Incredibly skilled, powerful, but not free. Then we got our man Yoda, and Empire Strikes Back in the swamp. Doesn't need anybody, doesn't need anything. Full of knowledge and free. The inventory process gets us to the place where the mask is gone. We no longer have to battle. We follow the force, the intuition within us, and we're free. How free do you want to be? One of our mentors, Mark, says you go to the ocean with a thimble, how much are you going to get? A thimble full of water. I'm a guy that doesn't want a thimble. I want it all. I want access to everything. Inventory is the gateway to it. This is where you start to realize and experience life in a different way. And you no longer have to keep up all the fronts. You don't have to wear all the masks that you've been wearing your entire life because you become free. You become who you are.
So the first step, I believe, is a process of self-examination. You know, you're looking at your experience with drugs and alcohol to see if you're powerless, if you've been stripped of power, choice, and control. Then you continue to examine yourself around unmanageability internally. And then in the second step, you turn towards God. You start looking at ideas about this power and what it means to you. The third step, I believe you're turning to other people because of the part of the prayer. It says, take away my difficulties so that victory over them can bear witness to those that I will help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. So for me, the third step compels me to testify. Brandon and I are giving you pieces of our testimony this weekend because we're trying to sell you on the program of recovery outlined in the big book. So now we just finished step four. Step four is part of self-examination. Step five is part of self-examination. Step six is part of self-examination. And step seven, we go to God. And steps eight and nine, we're going to turn out and connect with others. And that process will repeat itself in 10, 11, and 12. So now we're back into this self-examination. Each step, I believe, has a purpose or an intent underlying. So having made our personal inventory, I'm on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. That's the intent behind the fifth step. New attitude, new relationship. And to discover the obstacles that are keeping us blocked. We've admitted certain defects, and we've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now, these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we've done well enough in admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason first, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking and or drug use. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk or high. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they'd lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves. but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone all their life story. More than most people, addicts and alcoholics lead a double life, triple, quadruple, whatever comes after that. They're very much actors. To the outer world, they present a stage character. There's the one they like their fellows to see. They want to enjoy a certain reputation, but they know deep down in their heart that they don't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things they do on their sprees. Coming to senses, they're revolted at certain episodes they vaguely remember. They push these memories. These memories are a nightmare. They tremble to think someone might have observed them. As fast as they can, they push these memories far inside themselves. They hope they will never see the light of day. They are under constant fear and tension. This makes for more drug use and more drinking. Skip the next paragraph. We must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long and happily in this world. I become more open when more people know who I am.
The more of our stuff that we share with you, the less power it has over us.
So, rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom to take this intimate and confidential step.
Persons?
Skip down to the next paragraph, last sentence. The rule is we must be hard on ourselves, but always considerate of others. Skip to the top of page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We've written an inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we're engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. So we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now these are the fifth step promises. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, this assumes, condition, withholding nothing back, we're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but we now begin to have a spiritual experience, or maybe begin to have another spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink or the drug problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand in the spirit of the universe.
So go to your counselor and say, how many sessions do I need to come to have my fears fall from me? How many sessions do I need to be able to look the world in the eye? To be alone at perfect peace and ease? Because the reality is that these fifth step promises are magical. And they do come true for pretty much everybody that has honestly gone through the fourth step, written the inventories, and is willing to share it with somebody else. I was talking with a guy the other day, and he said, you know, I realized just today. So he finished his fifth step like a month ago. He said, I realized just today that the last time I could even recall thinking about drinking was before my fifth step. Since I've done my fifth step, he says, not until today have I even thought about when was the last time I thought about it. How does that happen? Sounds like magic to me. Maybe that's why they call us a cult.
So I'm going to give you my experience from two perspectives. One being a sponsor and one being an individual that takes a fifth step. So when I took my first fifth step, it was a thick binder. It was about at least an inch thick. And the guy that took me through the steps the very first time, I would go to his house on Sunday, and he would sit for 3 hours. And I had to read every single resentment. And it took us, I don't remember, it was 6 to 8 Sundays of going to his house and doing my fifth step. And in the back of my inventory, in the sex inventory, there was a lot of stuff around a lot of homosexual experiences, things that happen in crack houses, being, you know, molested, all these things. And I'm sitting there every Sunday going, am I going to tell him this? Other than the people involved in the experience, no one on this planet knows about any of this stuff. The things that I would get involved in, living out of hotel rooms for months at a time. And the people I hung out with and the things that I did. And the Sunday came, and I told him. And when that fifth step was complete and I walked to my car, I can picture it right now, me walking out of his front door, going across his front yard to my car, and I felt lighter. I felt like I'd entered a new world. It was the first time in my life that I had been completely honest with another human being about every aspect of my life. And the thing that I walked away with the most was that I knew I had the capacity now to be honest and be transparent. And I also knew that every single thing that happened in my life I had created. And I saw my hypocrisy, because everything that I was pissed at, I did to other people. Those were the revelations in my first fifth step. Now, I'm next Sunday, I'll have, you know, God willing, I have 10 years clean and sober. I've probably done a minimum of 30 fifth steps in 10 years. Because of this line in the book, it says, person or persons. And I work the first 9 steps every year. It seems like that's what happens. About every 12 months, 14 months, I rework the first 9 steps. There was 1 year, 2 years ago, I did 5 fifth steps. I prayed, and the number 5 showed up, and I said, nope, I'm going to pray again. And the number 5 showed up again, and then I prayed again. And the 5 showed up again, and I did 5 fifth steps. I didn't want to do 5 fifth steps, but that was what came to me in prayer. Other times I've done 2, sometimes I've done 3. This past time when Brandon and I and this other individual went through the steps, we fifth stepped with each other. We sat around a fire at his farm, and we all swapped fifth steps. That's how we went through the work. And this fifth step is, as I've sponsored people over 10 years, individuals have such a powerful surrender that the obsession is ripped from them right then and there. And this is the other step where I watched a lot of guys have their mental obsession completely removed, and the other step is the 9th step. Now, I'm not saying those are the steps where it happens. I'm just looking at what I've observed over the 10 years that I've sponsored men. But one of the things I do when I listen to a fifth step is I take out 3 sheets of paper and I keep a list of their fears as I'm listening to their resentment inventory, and then I give them their fears to inventory. I keep a list of their grosser handicaps, and then I keep a list of their 8th step list. It helps me stay engaged if I'm listening to a fifth step. But I also start off a fifth step with these questions. Like, I listened to a fifth step last Monday night, and the first thing I asked them right before we started was, okay, have you ever been involved in an abortion? Have you ever been involved in rape? Have you ever been involved in a homosexual experience? Have you ever been involved in a murder, covering up a murder, armed robbery, burglary, physical abuse, or bestiality? Immediately, I ask those questions. I'll tell you, in 10 years, I've had every single one of those questions answered. And I don't violate the confidence of a fifth step.
Sacred.
It's sacred. And so the reason I do that is because it says illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. You know? And after we were done, I said, did you leave anything out? He said, no. I said, are you sure? And so we're going to meet again on Monday night. I'll probably ask him again, hey, did you leave anything out? So those are just some practices that I use as we work these 12 steps, specifically this fifth step. And what that does, I believe when you do multiple fifth steps, you open yourself up to being authentic and being transparent. And the longer I stay clean and sober, the greater importance I place on having individuals in my life that I'm constantly fifth-stepping with as a result of the tenth step. Because I don't exist in this realm of solitary self-appraisal, because the book says a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. So this man sitting next to me, he literally knows every single thing in my life.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day, as I was like, man, we should get up and I should tell your story and you should tell my story. Because we could probably do it. That's how well we know each other. Okay? Is there anybody in your life that you could do that with?
And the cool thing about it is we have a handful of other men we could probably do
it
with.
Exactly.
And when you have that going on in your life, that level of authentic dialogue, and then the really cool part is you not only know what each other is struggling with, but you also get to share your perspectives on living a spiritual path. How are you being moved down your spiritual path? What are you experiencing? I mean, we've had some, I mean, just us on this trip this weekend, we've had some pretty deep dialogue about spirituality, and we don't always agree on it, but we don't try to convince the other person he's wrong. So to me, it's like my life has become an unfolding fifth step incorporated into the tenth step, because the tenth step says we discuss it immediately, but he and I don't always just discuss our troubles or our fears or our resentments. We're talking about spirituality and God and what we're doing and what we experience. But to me, it's all connected. It's this idea of being open with another individual. It was all born out of the fifth step. And it's the intent behind it is to have a new attitude and a new relationship with my Creator. And I think that stems from my relationships with people. And when I have this type of experience, a fifth step with multiple people, it deepens my experience with God. The book says we thank God from the bottom of our hearts because we know Him better. The closer I get with people, the more bonding I have, the closer I get to God. That's just something that I believe. Because the next paragraph is returning home. We find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything. For we're building an arch to which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Guys, remember, foundation, cement, the second step, being willing to believe is the cornerstone. The third step, decision, was the keystone. This is another stone that we're properly in place. We ask, have we skimped on the cement? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? These are all construction questions. We're building. Continue to build.
So this paragraph and the next two that we're going to talk about are rarely ever talked about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. Rarely talked about. And the three paragraphs are so powerful if you actually do the instructions. There was a guy that I listened to his fifth step recently, and there was... My mind works in a very logical way, and it connects dots, and it takes information and says, this came from that, this came from that, this connects to that, this all works this way. And there was something missing. There was a piece missing from what he was telling me that didn't fit. And I told him when we were done, I'm like, there's something missing. And I gave him the instructions for returning home, and he was supposed to sit with it. And what ended up happening is he went and he did the hour of returning home, and there's some stuff that bubbled right up. Boop, 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 boop. Stuff that he had put out of his mind that did not exist to him anymore, completely forgotten about it. He called me the next morning. He's like, some stuff. Well, actually, he texted me at like 2 in the morning. He was meditating over and over and over again because he was having this incredible experience with whatever this power was that was showing up in his life. And he's like, this shit is awesome. some stuff came up that I need to tell you about. Okay? So, have we admitted anything? It came up for him. There was some stuff that he had admitted. And it came up in that returning home in the practice after the fifth step. Incredibly powerful paragraph. Most people probably don't even read it. Well, most people don't really read the book, so they don't, definitely don't read it.
This hour returning home, I've done it different ways. Sometimes I will meditate and then I review my first five steps and then I sit in meditation for the rest of the hour. One time I was instructed to do nothing except sit alone in perfect peace and ease. The guy taking me through the steps says, I don't want you to pray, I don't want you to meditate, I just want you to find a comfortable spot and sit alone in perfect peace and ease. So this hour returning home, this reflection, reflection is a vital part of spiritual life. And it's part of our step work on a regular basis. And you see the book has these suggestions about reflection. And here's one of them. And so as you venture out and you leave the bridges of hope and you get active in this step work, one of the things I would invite you to consider is, you know, the degree to which you live the double life. And to me, the beautiful part of the 12 steps is this fifth step, because it forces us to shed the double life on some level. And for some of us, it comes back because we think our life is compartmentalized, right? We think our life has all these compartments in it. If I'm dishonest in this compartment down here, it's not going to affect this compartment here. It's all connected. It will bleed into every compartment of your life. And through a fifth step, you can start to shed some of that armor that you think is protecting you. Because the more transparent and open we are, the stronger we are. Another paradox. But we think we've got to wear this bulletproof armor, and that's what protects us. That a man is supposed to do certain things and behave in certain ways. And through fifth steps, through individuals asking me questions in a fifth step, I start to realize how some of these codes and these values that I live by don't serve me anymore. And how aspects of my character are actually destroying me. But they hang out for as long as they hang out. And this is a good segue, because you want to cover 6 and 7?
Sure.
And so we're moving into this idea of character. And that's what steps 6 and 7, those two steps, that's what they're about. Does anyone have a question about the fifth step?
Okay. So the walls that I build to protect me also enslave me. I think I need this stuff to protect me, but what I'm really doing is blocking me from everything. And I should see that by the time I get to the end of my fifth step. I should see that as I've done my returning home. And then we've got these two paragraphs on page 76 that are perfect. I think they're perfect. I think there's no need for expansion on these two paragraphs the way that they're written. But yet we have two essays in the 12 and 12 that talk about them. Top of page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction the questions that were in the prior, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. And then there's the question that has one question mark but contains two questions. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which we have admitted are objectionable? So where are the two questions? Have I admitted they're objectionable? Exactly. Because here's the way I look at it, is if I see that my life depends on working these steps in the first step, and I know that I have no ability to do anything about it, I will seek something other than me in the second step. In the third step, I make a commitment, a decision that I'm going to do the rest of this work. In the fourth step, I write these three pitiful, I mean, like, they're really pitiful. Like, these guys that I listen to their inventory, like, legitimately, when they write the inventories, it's tough for them to get this stuff out. But if you've listened to enough Fifth Steps, guys, the stuff that's running around in your head is pathetic. The stuff that you think you need to protect yourself from the rest of the world from is not real. It's like make-believe shit. And so if I've really written a thorough fourth step and I've looked at those inventories, what I see is that it says in the book, these resentments, fancied or real. By the way, if I'm involved in them, they're always fancied. Because here's how I tell stories. I don't know about you guys, but like, so let's say somebody makes me mad. So I call somebody to get them to agree with me. I tell them the story. I find out the parts of the story that they agree with me the most and the ones that they disagree with me the most. So I'm like, okay, these are good, those are bad. Call somebody else. Want to bitch about the same thing. I've omitted all the things that the other person disagreed with, only told them. By the time I'm talking to the third or the fourth person about this thing that just happened to me, it in no way resembles what really happened. Because I've left out all the stuff that made me look bad. That and a lot of this other work that I've done in my life, I realize that the information that I receive through my senses is very limited as to what is actually going on. And so I know without a doubt that everything that I encounter in my life is not real. It is processed in a way that I can only look at it from my perspective, and I got to be right. But if I've written a thorough fourth step, I see that stuff. And I see the way that I harm the people around me. And if I've got a good sponsor and they've listened to my fifth step, you can guarantee by the time I got to six, I see that this stuff's objectionable. I like to write, keep my notes and then give it to them and then just hold it up. Well, I'll read it to them first and then I'll hand it to them and I'll say, do you want to be that way anymore? And that if we've done a good job, they're like, no, I do not want to be this guy anymore. Objectionable. So if I admit that it's objectionable, it's this the first part of this question is almost unnecessary. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things? Hell yeah. I don't want to be this way anymore. I don't want to keep wrecking my life and everybody that I really love. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to hurt my kids anymore. I don't want to hurt my wife. I don't want to hurt my parents. I don't want to hurt my loved ones anymore. I do not want to be that way anymore. Cool. You're at step six. Can he now take all of them, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. What you will start to encounter, the things that you're not willing to let go of, they'll start just wearing you down. They'll just start leaning on you. And eventually you're going to want to get rid of it. Now, can I remove my defect? I hear in meetings, like, I'm going to go home and work on smashing my defects. Well, how the fuck do you do that? What kind of machine is that? Here's how defects get removed from me. Is if they do get removed, is as I go out and make amends to people and I knock on enough doors to make amends for being an asshole, at some point in time, you know what I realize? I'm an asshole. And my awareness around that gets me to the point where I don't want to be that way anymore. And through the 10th step and continuing to watch, I will be more aware of how asshole shows up. And so that defect gets reduced. Now, for me, there's a lot of the things that I find objectionable from time to time that do not get removed. One of the defects that I possess is I like to be the center of attention and to act like I know what I'm talking about. Exhibit A. Where am I sitting? You guys are looking at me. I've got some knowledge that I'm sharing with you. That's a defect. when used incorrectly. But I also believe that all of our defects are also our assets. And that this defect, as it has been in the past, for some of you it's still a defect, but for others of you, it's serving a purpose. It's doing something for the good. And my awareness of the defect allows me to do those things. Now, if I come across in a very harsh and demanding and way that is punishing to the people that are in front of me, then the defect is actually acting like a defect instead of an asset. These things show up. There's the yin and the yang in everything that exists. The dark and the light. It's always there in everything. So I don't believe that all defects are defects. I believe that some of them are assets. I can tell you how this shows up physically for me. Is I'm the type of guy that when I actually hit the gym, I gain mass incredibly fast. That's an asset. When I don't hit the gym, I end up kind of looking a little chubby and gaining weight relatively quickly. For me, that's a defect. It's the same thing. And everything in your life operates the same way. Everything. So, this idea that I can remove my defects, it's never going to happen. My awareness of these defects increases, but it never really goes away. It's just less harmful to those around me. So, a lot of the time I'll have, when Spirit speaks to me, I'll have the guys that I sponsor sit with the sixth step to wait for something to happen. I had an experience the first time I went through the steps where I was told to sit on the sixth step until something happened. And I wanted, because I like to know things, I wanted to know what that was going to look like for me. And my sponsor at the time was like, it shows up differently for different people. Here's how it showed up for me. I don't know how it's going to show up for you. So I had this particular morning where I was sitting there in meditation. It had been about probably at least a week since I had finished my fifth step. And my intent was to sit in meditation and meditate on the mother of my children and my relationship with her. And from the right side of my mind, this other thought from this childhood event kind of came crushing into my mind, and I kept rejecting it. I don't want to look at that. I'm looking at this. I don't want to look at that. Like I got to tell my thoughts exactly how they're supposed to act, right? And so I'm sitting there, and eventually I just get tired of this other thought crashing in, so I let it come in. And if the only way I can describe it, and it was, is if you took all of my defects as I see them, my desire to dominate, be the center of attention, for women to long after me, all these things, they were all little dots out here. And then the experience from childhood comes into the middle of it in a flash, and it connects everything. And I realize that this little insignificant moment in my childhood connects all of my defects. It gets me to see, holy crap, that's why I do all this stuff? And I end up having this weeping experience and just like, oh, God, like happiness, sadness, fear, lust, everything all at once just comes out of me. And then I see my sponsor that night at a meeting, and I explain the thing, and he's like, so what's your six-step experience going to look like? And I'm like, I don't know, but when it happens, it's probably going to be cool. And he's like, well, why don't you describe that to me again? And I described it to him again, and he goes, do you think that might have been it? Oh. See, the problem with the spiritual path is I think that I know that something's going to look like, an experience that I've never had. When I let the experience happen, I have it. But if I refuse the experience, it could happen to me and be the coolest thing that has ever happened, but I missed it. Because I'm too busy thinking I know things. In that moment, I left, went to the church, and I said the seventh step prayer. And what's interesting, I don't know if you guys caught it or not, the third step prayer, there's no amen at the end of it. But this one says, "My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in my way of usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding." But then there's an amen. So the way that I like to look at it is everything from the third step to the seventh step is one continuous prayer. I'm asking God to mold me and shape me and let me see these things in steps 4 and 5. 6, I get to that point. 7, I close the prayer. It's important. 3 to 7 is one act, is the way that I look at it. And there's so many people that they get through 4 and 5 and then they quit. We didn't finish. It finishes with amen.
That's it. All right, guys. I guess we'll see you back at 7.
What's the deal with the food?